we can go through the name game of the title of the episode. By the way, this is Fargo TV, the channel on West Coast Project for Fargo TV. My name is Mike, and I'm here with Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike.
Michelle plus 30. 30 minutes.
No, it's not quite 30. Come on, let's be real.
But I was looking around on Reddit, and I came up with these guys looking up, trying to figure out Lauren Melville's name, the meaning of his name. Have you ever thought about that?
No, huh?
Well, one person says the, see if I got their name here. Alexander, very uniquely spelled Alexander, says, if it's poorly translated or loosely translated from Latin, you could call it bad voice, like Malvo, bad voice. And then another person says, this person's screen name on Reddit is The Beginning is the End, says, there's a Shakespearean comedy called, it's Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and it's...
Oh, that's interesting.
The name Malvolio, or the character Malvolio in that comedy is a vain and self-important man in a position of authority, which he abuses to bully others. A jester and some other characters subversively deceive, prank, and torment him, and by the end of the play, he's been treated so badly, he's almost as much a victim as the people he's bullied. End of quote. So that's The Beginning is the End's theory on Reddit.
That's interesting. No, I would have never even thought, I don't think, to look up his name. I mean, so many names are so, you know, odd.
And then there's another character in Romeo and Juliet called Benvolio. Beneficial, I guess, or, you know, good, well-wisher. So that's the kind of the opposite of Malvolio is Benvolio. Anyway, so I put good use to my time, my 30
That's
minutes.
Good. That sounds good. That sounds like you did. I apologize to you.
It's all right. So do you want to go through, start off what we saw?
Yeah.
What did you learn? Should. First, before we do that, what did you learn this week? What did you learn this week in life and then in Fargo?
Oh, in life, I couldn't even. It's been a crazy, crazy week. Great week. Great week for life. But... not just Fargo, but TV. I mean, has this been a crazy TV week? We had a guy post to the Facebook page talking about how he's tired of the prequels and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I just got to tell you, I am in love with this. We had Game of Thrones, Mad Men, Silicon Valley, 24, this Fargo. This has been a crazy, crazy TV week. My mind just... and Louis started back with a double episode. It's just been insanely good TV lately. And I don't know if we kind of go in and out of cycles of liking TV, maybe, or if I do. But I'm just in love with TV right now. We have some of the greatest shows on that I can recall.
I think it's just that good TV prompts more good TV. It's competitive. You have to be... all these channels are looking for subscribers and viewers and, you know, eyeballs. So they got to have as good a programming as the next guy. So they kind of all up their game, I think.
Well, they're kudos because they're doing a great job. I think. I'm astounded with all of the good TV. It's really too much to watch and ingest. And what a great problem to have. Oh, what shall I, you know, spend my hour on tonight of TV or whatever? It's really good. There's a station wagon that's pulling a loaded trailer down a road and just desolate, white, nothing. And we find out in just a little while that is Stavros and his wife and their baby. And they're moving. They're pulling this trailer full of their whole house full of everything. They're pulling everything they own with them, and she's very upset at him. She doesn't want to be there. It's a cold place, so we assume that they're moving from some warm place, and we find out that they evidently had a lot of debt and some bill collectors calling, and just he feels like they're getting a new start, and she's just not maybe so happy with this new start.
Yeah, it seems like we see a lot of scenes, like three out of the four shows I've opened with that road scene.
Yeah.
The only one that didn't was the one with the St. Paul building.
Right. And then it went into the road scene right after that. So except for the flashback of the naked trunk guy.
Well, yeah, they're going to do flashbacks a little bit into the series because, like, first two or three, you're not going to really need a flashback.
Right.
Plus, they probably have new viewers that may not have been all synced up with having seen all the other episodes. But, yeah, so they're on the run. They're kind of getting away from somewhere, and they're heading to the bleak northern Minnesota town and trying to get away. And they're at their wit's end and money's end, it looks like.
Were you shocked that it was true, that the spoilers were true?
I wasn't shocked. I think it was really cool that it was connected. And, you know, it puts the show and the movie in the same universe now. You know, that there is really a Lundegaard, and there is really, the other sheriff and the other characters, and you know, some of those people are dead, of course, but they're in the same world. You know, that's something that literally was in the movie.
It was. And I thought with the movie, that was one of the big questions in the movie, is whatever happened to that money? I mean, the money's just kind of sitting there. We knew that, but you kind of wonder, did anybody ever find that money? And what a treat it would be if someone found that money. And what would someone do if they found that money and the whole thing? And now they're kind of answering all those questions.
Yeah, but that money was meaningless in the movie. You know, in the movie, money never came into play. It was all the, you know, that was the MacGuffin. All the things in the movie were about the people moving and negotiating among themselves.
Yeah, but it kind of symbolizes the greed to me of everybody involved. It was like a... Everybody wanted it, and it wasn't necessarily about the money in any way, but it was the driving force behind everybody in there was money, money, money. And now we get to find out what actually came of that, which I think is just the best plot ever. I think that was great. And
so
I think
so
smart that people
do you think we'll see any other connections to the movie, like any of the people maybe?
Ooh, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but we might, huh? Because if they do more backstory of it, or, well, I don't know. I don't know how we would do that. What do you think? Have you heard any spoilers on that or anything?
No, and this is when they send out the screeners to all the people that do the reviews of the show, they send out the first four episodes. Mm-hmm. So now those people won't have the advantage of having seen these four episodes. So the playing field is pretty level now. I think some of the people doing podcasts and a lot of the people writing up blogs and reviews and stuff, they have the advantage of, you know, when they're writing up the review for episode one, they know what's going to happen in the next three. So it gives them kind of this edge.
Right.
Now they can't do that because everybody's kind of waiting for episode five together on the same playing field.
So do you think she knows at this point, his wife? Because he gets back in the car, and he does not bring that suitcase. And she's still complaining. She still is complaining about the truck that went by and the whole situation that happened. And we probably should even talk about that a little bit. Because he tries to flag down that truck, and the truck goes speeding past him. And the force of the truck knocks him to the ground. He falls to his face, and he starts praying. He's praying for a warm bed and some kind of relief for his family. And he's making all these promises that he'll be a good, righteous man if he can get some help. And he glances up and he sees the ice scraper. And
yeah, he does get in the car. He doesn't really say anything. He doesn't like show this big black bag of stuff. They don't show him putting it in the back, but he must have put it in the back somewhere.
Or somewhere in the on that trailer, because she didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, the trailer maybe. Also, they're in a predicament. They're still out of gas in the middle of nowhere in the freezing cold. They didn't just get they don't get gas with that money. You know, they got to still get somehow get to a gas station or get somebody to help them. Which I guess they must have. Your question's a good one. Does she know about it? I think she must, because he tells her there is a God, and you got to think that conversation doesn't just end there, you know. And they talk about something else. He probably tells her why he finally believes there is a God.
if for nothing else, just to shut her up griping for a minute, because she's really laying into him. You
she's
know?
Not the only nagging wife. That's another theme of this series. It's like the nagging wives. God.
I mean, he has to get out of the car, even, because she's just going on and on. I mean, you have to admit, though, he's kind of put her in a situation. She's stuck in the middle of nowhere with a toddler in the back asleep. You know, think she's going to freeze to death. It's not like she's complaining with no reason, maybe, but it was pretty harsh, the beating she was giving him.
So I saw an interview with Noah Hawley, the writer, that they had to build that fence. That's not the exact same fence from, whatever, 26 years ago. They had to build it. I think they're doing most of this stuff in Calgary, somewhere in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what so I read, too.
They took video, or they looked at the video in the movie, and they copied the fence, and they had to put up a new fence.
Oh, that's interesting that they had to, that they went to that much trouble to make it so authentic.
Yeah.
Because the road looks the same. I mean, from the movie, I mean, to this TV series, it looks the same, so...
So yeah, now we're in the next scene where we see the plumber.
Did you know this is how dim I am? Okay, the first time I watched that, I didn't realize that was Don Chum.
Yeah, I realized it after he kind of got going, after he got out of the truck and stuff. Not right off the very first scene, I didn't see that it was him.
I didn't either. And I was like, I couldn't believe once I saw it, it was like one of those smack yourself in the head moments. And even after he had said, kind of brought religion up to Stavros and talking about the plagues and stuff like that, I thought, now that's awfully coincidental, still not realizing.
Obviously had his script from his boss, Mr. Right. Marlowe.
Hey, don't you think Don is really going along with this in a very cheerful manner?
He's an idiot. He works for Malvo now. He's probably getting paid something. He's probably getting threatened if he doesn't do things right. And he's an idiot.
I mean, he's just like whistling and going about his work. He's getting choked on the job. And then we find out later on, he, you know, deals with all the other stuff. And he just couldn't care less. It's just like another day. He just doesn't even seem to have any thoughts to the hazards of this work. And it's funny to me how he's just so nonchalant about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's lots of times people that are like obtuse just have that luxury. They don't need to worry about the details and the problems that seemingly would make sense to worry about in real life. I mean, that's just, he's portraying that pretty well.
Well,
who was the guy when he left? Who do you think was watching from the woods when he drove away?
That was Malvo.
Malvo or one of the wrench and numbers team?
No, it was Malvo. And this is why, because I wasn't sure. But then later on, when Gus pulls up and finds Malvo there, the plumber van, I think, is pulling off at that same point. So I think we're kind of crossing the time. Remember Gus was pulling up?
Yeah, that's the same. I didn't realize that was the same place. I thought that was where Chump had landed. He's kind of stopped, you know, he arrived somewhere else and then Melva was there. But that makes sense that's still Stavros's house, huh?
Yeah, because remember Gus was going about the murdered dog. That's what he got called for.
Right.
And so, of course, you know, he was headed, we assume, to Stavros' house. I thought it was funny, just to backtrack 1 second, is where the plumber, Don, is yelling that Stavros is crazy. And I think this is where Stavros starts thinking, am I crazy? I think he really starts thinking that he's losing it now.
Yeah, I think it's all planned that way by Malvo. Tell him he's crazy.
Right.
Get right with the Lord.
Right. Okay, so then we see Gus Grimley comes out of the convenience store, and he's just, I mean, he's so bumbling. He's getting a call on his radio, and he sits his drink down. The drink falls off the car, and he's just having the hardest time. And then he finds out that the animal control guy's out again, and he asks if the guy has the cancer, because he's out all the time. And it turns out that the poor guy does. So he's put his foot in his mouth over that. But he has to go see about a murdered dog. And did you notice that the Jewish mitzvah truck, is that the right word?
Yeah.
Was in that scene too?
Yeah, that thing's all over the place. I wonder,
are they just putting this in every episode just to throw us, or wonder what
that
is?
Well, that's the third time that I've noticed it. So
yeah.
It's in enough episodes to make some sort of a meaning. I haven't attached it to that meaning yet.
Yeah, it's like in a repair shop or maybe an oil change place or something. It's like only half sticking out, but it's interesting that it was shown again.
When Gus pulls up to Malvo and kind of gets his gun out and says, put your hands up or whatever, do you think that call he makes is even real? If Malvo makes a call, like, hold on, I'm on a phone call. Is that call even real?
You know, I think it was. I had to watch that a couple times. Do you realize what he said on that phone call?
Yeah, he's calling his package requested Frank Peterson.
Right.
He's calling. I wondered if that might be how he set in motion all of those alibi arrangements.
That's exactly. Of course, I didn't know at the time, but he's like, you know, this is Duluth, package requested Frank Peterson. You know, that's what he's saying. And but I didn't know if it was real at first. I thought he might just be kind of pulling the wool over Gus's eyes, just showing his nonchalance at the whole
scene. Yeah,
because
he makes
that
call in like 1 second. He's talking to someone, like didn't even have time to connect to anything.
And I wonder if he didn't like leave a message or something.
Maybe they had that all prearranged, that was the message to get the alibi spinning. But
what's so funny is he's like, his disguise, other than of course his fabulous complete change of character, but his disguise is pushing his hair off his face.
Yeah.
Remember he had like the bangs before, and his whole disguise is like just kind of brushing his hair backward.
Well, there's a fascinating transition that we see from Malvo by degrees. Like he pushes his hair a little bit. Then he gets into the police department and he kind of builds up this father or whatever, Fletcher or Frank Peterson, Reverend Peterson. But he doesn't do it all at once, like snap it's on, snap it's off. He like builds it up little by little until he's in full mode like 10 minutes in later.
I thought if anybody questions Billy Bob Thornton's acting ability, I don't know how they could after that scene.
Yeah.
He literally turned from this ruthless, careless criminal into this. He appeared smaller to me. How does that work?
Yeah, he hunched over.
Yeah, and his cardigan. I mean, he's got that old man cardigan kind of. Oh, I hope that wasn't ugly. But you know what I mean? Like this homely, like. That was even uglier, wasn't it? But like this cardigan.
Well,
the
sweater
got,
was
like,
ugly.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, it was so bad, and it was so perfect.
Well, he transitions into this. Did I say that right? Right, transitions. Mm-hmm. He transitions into this Frank Peterson slowly and by degrees, and then he also transitions out of him when he's leaving the station when they set him free. That's interesting, too, if you get a chance and watch it again, check that out, that he doesn't just become Malvo again. He becomes Malvo slowly. He emerges up out of this Frank Peterson character.
I agree.
That was cool.
I definitely noticed how he did that. It definitely was in degrees, and he first took on the hair, and then he took on started to take on the demeanor, and then like being all compliant, and then he started taking on the accent. It definitely was in degrees, and he killed that scene.
And then he tells Gus that you're making a mistake while he's being driven into the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we see Gus telling his bosses that they're making a mistake. That was kind of a neat bookend to that.
It was, and Malvo tells him that's what he's going to be saying in a couple of hours.
Right.
That's what he tells Gus in the car, and then Gus is just not very pleased with even having him speak.
He's pulling all the strings. Malvo's like the puppeteer of everything.
And by the time he gets him in there to the booking agent, he is in complete transformation. He has on these big glasses because he's got the glaucoma, we find out.
And, he stole those glasses from the cop at the front door, too. Did you see that?
No, did he? No, yeah. I didn't.
He took
did
them off.
Really?
The guy that was kind of mean, the mean cop, like, what do you got there, Gus? Somebody mean to a cat, like making fun of him.
Yeah.
His humane, his animal humane part of the job. But, yeah, he takes those glasses up off that guy's desk while he looks away.
I did not. How would they not notice that was that guy's glasses?
I don't know, but that's what he does.
I did not know. That is hilarious. But he turned into this. He's all compliant, and he's got this thick Minnesotan accent, and he's well, this is a boondoggle for sure, and you'll get no pushback from me. And just, I mean, he's perfect.
So Molly's at a computer with those hot Asian babes with the big fish. Actually, somebody puts a. We flash over to Molly wherever she is in Bemidji, I guess, because Gus calls her. But that made me wonder, like, was she sitting at Bill's computer, or did that just pop up on her computer? And I think on my second look, it was her computer, right?
It's her computer. She's out in the office, and she's not in Bill's office.
So how did that happen?
I wondered if it wasn't, like, a virus or something. Maybe that had infected all the computers, because you know how pictures will pop up with virus, but how odd to have pictures of like Oriental girls holding big fish.
Somebody on Reddit actually put up something that said, oh, I know that website, here it is. And it was like hotasianbabeswithbigfish.com. And I clicked on it. It was just a fake URL. It didn't really go anywhere, but that's pretty funny.
I mean, how would you find that? We kind of know that Bill likes the big fish because he has the thing on the wall.
And who doesn't like hot Asian babes?
Yeah. Well, okay. Okay. So she gets the email pop-up, too, and that's where she finds out. She's done some research and found out that the phone call was made from Lester's house to Leroy's Motor Inn.
Yeah, from the NSA.
Right.
That had to
Did
be...
you notice her other emails?
Yeah, about the cheese and the coffee machine getting fixed. Remember when email used to be that way, where you'd get a notice like, you have an email? And it used to be like, it used to kind of stop you and get your attention. Like, oh, I wonder what that could be.
Oh, I know. Now yeah, you'd like go thousands. Check it. I know. Yeah. So she's sitting there, and then she gets a call, and it's Gus, and she doesn't remember him by name. That was so sad. She's like, so this is who then? And you can tell he's
Well, kinda, she's distracted.
I know, but I mean, talk about crush him.
That's a pretty big clue. I mean, she's pretty distracted by that pretty good clue there. That's understandable.
She's had great clues the whole time. And this is just another in a series of them. And, but still, she doesn't remember Gus by name. So anyway, he tells her what happened and what he did. And what do you think she thought about that? About his arrest of Malvo?
I think she was just glad, but I think she was really super surprised.
I don't think she liked how he handled it. I really got the impression that she didn't like that, because she didn't think that was the... I mean, because she's like, so you arrested him? Because wouldn't it be better to maybe find him and then get some evidence on him than just...
Yeah, well, Gus is not just bumbling his coke and his car keys. He's bumbling kind of the way he does his job, too.
That's so sad, because we like him and we want to like him and we know he's a good guy, so...
He's an animal control expert, not a great detective.
I don't think that's what he wants to be. I think that's just what he's kind of had to fall into. But, So anyway, the chief Bill is in there. He's having a conversation with the guys about how there's a storm coming in, and I don't know if that's going to play out or not, but and how they can make some extra money plowing and that kind of thing. And Molly comes in and tells him that Malvo's been arrested and she'd like to go to Duluth and have a conversation.
Yep. It's Stormwatch 2006. He had the whole crew there, like, rapt attention, watching a couple pictures
Everybody
of snow.
Molly. Yeah.
That was funny. The other thing I noticed that when she said to Gus, I'm getting in the car. Like, they sounded pretty excited to see each other in and of itself, to just to see each other besides the case. Like, Gus looked kind of happy and she looked kind of happy and excited that she was going to go see him.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're back at Lester's house now with his brother. And Chaz comes in with him, and Lester's like, hey, you don't really need to come in. But why do you think Chaz went in with Lester? Do you think they're, because the wife, who's the wife, Kitty? Do you think, because he says, Kitty wanted me to, blah, 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 and then he kind of trails off. Do you think they're worried about Lester killing himself or being alone in the house for some reason? Why didn't they want Lester alone in the house?
Well, I mean, once he goes in and sees it, I think it's kind of obvious why, because of everything. But before that, they wouldn't have known that the blood was still on the floor and that kind of thing. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but thinking about it, I would think that it would be because they don't want him alone in the house that his wife was killed in. Maybe they're worried that he'll hurt himself or something.
Yeah, but Chaz isn't really the greatest escort to be there. He's like kind of grossed out by the blood.
Chaz is becoming more and more gross anyway as a character. He's horrible. But
so we got to talk about Lester's hand now. So he goes to get the suitcase and he hurts his hand, and we see he kind of unwinds the bandage and we see his hand. It's all puffy and it's worse. Do you think his wound is psychosomatic?
No. Okay. No, I don't.
I kind of think it is because of a number of things. Other people around Lester don't notice his hand. And his hand always is worse when he's reliving the guilt of the experiences of the wife and the house and all these events that have recently happened and the murder of the sheriff. That's when his hand is always the worst. Like, we see him later on, and he's got gloves on. Like, I don't think you could put a glove over that hand the way it looked in that room. He's got his winter gloves on. He gets a call. He like flips open his phone, like lickety split, nice and easy. He doesn't feel the pain. He gets the handcuffs put on him. He feels the wincing. He sees, you know, we watch him wince in pain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a theory that this is a lot of psychosomatic. The wound is psychosomatic in addition to being, you know, the pellet.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it like that at all. And all of that makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about it like that. Because, I mean, it's gradually getting worse as it would if there was an infection in it. And I was looking at it more like, it's kind of like a metaphor for his life, more so, if you can believe how silly that might sound. Because it's like, the more he messes with it, the worse it gets.
Well, and the more his guilt builds up.
Yeah.
That's the theory.
But,
because could you even put a glove on that hand? The way it looked in the room up there, it was like swelling out of its own skin.
It was really gross. And this is at the point that you're going to have to get some medical attention for that, or you're going to be really sick in a really short period of time from the way that thing looked. And I thought the glove was to cover it up. I thought maybe he's a little man. We'll assume his hands are not really large hands. And I thought maybe he'd gotten some gloves just to cover up the wound. But that's definitely an interesting way to look at it. So you think that it's not actually that bad. He just has a sore hand.
Is that
what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I think it's bad. He's got a pellet still in there and it's infected, but it really gets really bad when he's thinking about the guilt that he bears with this crime and this murder and the other guy's murder.
That could be if they would show it to us when he's not feeling guilt and it looked smaller, I would probably buy into that a little bit more. I'm thinking that might be something that eventually even does him in. That's bad. We're talking about at this point maybe some type of losing your hand or blood infection, a sepsis or something. I don't know.
So there's a couple other cool little things. Do you notice when they show Malvo that you hear the sleigh bells? They're super, super subtle.
You're letting them go?
Desk duty, 2 weeks.
No, just a...
3 weeks.
For Pete... You're making a mistake.
Grimley, with me now.
Like he's, it's like contrary to what you would think you would hear. You'd think it'd be something evil, but it's like this really slight little sleigh bells twinkle.
I'll have to listen for that. I did not notice that. Did you notice that they start translating for Wrench?
Yeah.
Finally?
And the other guy, yeah. He signs him back.
I thought that was good. Wonder what made them finally start translating it.
I don't know. Maybe they kind of caught it halfway in.
Yeah.
What did you think of their phone call, this threatening phone call? I guess it had to be numbers, but he was calling. It couldn't have been Wrench, but it was a call in about the Widow Hess is all yours now, and their husband's nice and cozy, and the money's on the way.
I thought it was really, that was his home phone, right?
Yeah, that was while he was in the room with the suitcase.
Right, and he's only at home for a little tiny amount of time that they show us. I mean, he's not even staying there. So the fact that they called him as soon as he's there, I thought that was either highly coincidental or real telling about
how much they're watching him.
Yeah.
I also thought that they're doing what Malvo does. They're stirring the pot. You know, they're taunting him. In addition to the crimes that they're committing, Numbers and Wrench, they're also taunting, which is more, it's adding evil on top of evil.
Yeah, I don't think they have, not just them, but most people in this whole thing have a lot of respect for Lester. And so, yeah, they're definitely taunting.
At the diner, we see during the subtitles for the signing, we see that Wrench has some integrity. What did you think about that?
I was surprised. Were you?
A little bit. I mean, it's good that the criminals are not just all black, you know, there's like shades of gray in there too. But he wants the crime to be. Now, is it Wrench? It's the deaf guy, right?
Or that's Wrench.
But is it Wrench who has it? And maybe it's Numbers. Numbers, the speaking guy, is the one with the integrity, right?
No. The speaking guy, Numbers, wants just to kill him and be done and go home. And Wrench wants to know that they've got the right guy.
Yeah, you're right. I'm questioning myself remembering back, because when on the lake surface, it's Numbers making him try to say the words, I killed this guy or I did this to justify their
because they got in that argument over it at the dinner table. That's what that whole scene was about, was that Wrench wanted to know for sure and Numbers was just saying, I just want to go home. And so they kind of got a fight over it. And finally, Numbers concedes that he'll confess to it before they do anything to him.
Yep, you're right. So we see Lauren in the police department, and he has a couple minutes to make a phone call. And he doesn't call a lawyer or a bail bondsman. He calls the goofball Don Chump to make sure that the plan is still rolling ahead.
And he calls him at the pet store. How would he even know the number to that pet store? It's like he knows everything. He doesn't call his cell phone. He calls the pet store that Don Chump happens to be in at that particular moment.
And then rocket scientist Don Chump doesn't know who it is.
I know. And he's like, well, who knows you're there? And he goes, my mom? She thinks I'm getting a cat. Or it's like, do I sound like your mom?
Yeah.
So funny. And we find out that there's not enough of something there. He's going to have to go to other pet shops to look for it. And Malvo hasn't a care in the world, says he's at the police station. He'll be out in a couple hours to pick him up.
Yeah, did you see when the dopey cop, it's funny because the dopey cop tells him, you'll be here a few hours, and Malvo kind of thinks about it for a second. He goes, pick me up in 2 hours. Like, he shortens the time because he realizes how stupid the cop is.
That was, I didn't notice that, but that was a really good scene. It's so interesting because he even kind of changed back, because he changed back to Malvo on the phone with Don.
Yeah.
And then he immediately becomes Frank Peterson again.
There's so much subtle, funny stuff that it's worth watching a couple times just to catch the ones that you miss.
I agree. What did you think about in the next scene? We've got Bill and is it Lieutenant Schmidt? And they're kind of talking down to Gus. What do you think about that?
They're just incompetence. Bill hasn't even looked at the picture in the file that he's carrying around from Molly to see what Malvo looks like. Like, he asks if they have a picture of him, and Gus is like, yeah, it's in Molly's file. You got it right there. He has to tell him that he has the picture himself.
Yeah, he wants to know what kind of evidence they've got against this guy. And this is where you can tell that Schmidt, Gus's lieutenant, is starts to get embarrassed. It's like he didn't look through the evidence maybe enough before all of this came through, because he starts to think, I think at that point, that Gus has made a mistake.
Yeah, he doesn't want it. The worst thing to him, to Schmidt, is looking bad. Remember, he wanted Gus to go confess right away so that bullshittery, or whatever he called it, doesn't come back on them. Like, he wanted to unravel any problems that might come back to him to make him look bad. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. He does cringe when he realizes that there's weakness in this case.
And they talk about Gus being liking Molly. I mean, it just kind of belittled the whole situation. It was a little uncomfortable. I really disliked how they did that. It's kind of ugly. But they find out that the car's been wiped clean of prints. There was no dashboard cam and all that. So all they really have is the grainy picture from Molly. But, I mean, come on. You can tell who that is.
Yeah.
In that picture.
And Malvo's team back in Duluth does an awesome job of, like, covering, providing excuses and alibis, like the woman who won the bingo game and the alderman, and call anybody in town. They all know me. Like, how does he pull that off? That's a pretty awesome backup team to help cover those facts.
How would that work?
I think we're just supposed to be impressed with it, and the more you kind of dig into the details, they could have interviewed anyone at the office where he dragged the guy out in St. Paul. Any one of them would have seen Malvo and would have said, yeah, that's the guy, if they got them to come in and check him out.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know.
I think all the phones are jobs. I think those are all hitmen out on different jobs.
Well, that's what I thought, too, when we saw it. But when he says, call anybody in the city, you know, pick up a phone book and call anybody.
That's just the bravado of,
okay,
he knows they're not going to just pick up the phone and start calling random people.
Right, that they're going to call the specific people that he's mentioned as alibis. As a side note, did you notice that he's using, like, some UFDA comments and stuff like that? Yeah.
You got to get if you're going to bring it up, you got to get it right. It's oofta.
Isn't that that's not a Methodist comment, right? Or Lutheran, whatever kind of ministry.
No, it's probably a Scandinavian, you know, colloquialism. And, you know, that's Scandinavian people populate Minnesota pretty extensively.
Oh, okay.
It's probably some old European Scandinavian word that they use. But oofta, it's a pretty common Minnesota thing.
Okay. I didn't realize that. I thought it was like, I don't know, something different. It just seemed so weird to be coming. Yeah, I think
so,
you're right.
Malvo's emerging out of character as he leaves the police station, and Gus reveals more of his naivety by just kind of saying, how can you lie like that? Which is, a police officer asking a criminal that is just silly, it seems to me. You know why it can lie like that, because it's getting him off the hook, and it's what criminals do.
Yeah, and it's a pretty... he's so good at it. I think Gus is partially even impressed with how smooth and how good this has gone for Malvo. And in the meanwhile, we see that Molly has been talking to the hotel owner and finds out that Lauren wrote down his actual name, Lauren Malvo, in the book, even though he paid cash. And he left behind the tokens. Why do you think he did that there? Because some of the things I was reading said that they didn't think he would put his real name Because why would he?
Well, a criminal wouldn't. A real criminal wouldn't. He's, I don't know, I keep saying he's some sort of force, and I think that's what he's going to turn out to be. He's not just a, not your everyday hitman. He's like Mr. Special. He's got, you know, he's a force that's carrying some message that we're starting to see slowly but surely through these Zen cones and through the religious meanings behind some of the things we see in the show.
Well, I can see why he would put down a different name other than Frank Peterson, because that way he couldn't be connected to the same person, I guess. But I didn't really understand why he put down his real name. And then he left the stripper tokens, remember? The Lucky Penny tokens in the room?
Yeah.
Which would make him, you know, this Lorne Malvo character be connected to Sam Hess' murder.
Yeah, somebody on Reddit said, well, so what? What if Lorne Malvo is not even his name? That's another alias.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought, maybe.
But too. I think the real answer is he doesn't care because he can escape from it, because he's not bound by the same human constraints that a normal criminal would have. He's this essence of evil that can move in and out of things, you know, as he chooses. So we hear the riddle. He gives Gus a riddle as he leaves the police station. Did you get the answer to that right away, or did you have to wait till Molly helped us with it?
I didn't know the answer to it right away. Did you?
No, I kind of thought maybe money or something with money. People on Reddit also picked up that when right around that time he gives them the riddle, that we see a lot of green popping up. But the riddle was, you know, why does the human eye see more shades of green than any other color?
Mm-hmm.
So we see a green car. I think he gets into a green car when Mr. Chump picks him up, and we see a green wall, and we see green somewhere else, but that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's probably kind of common for a police department, isn't it? That's how I picture it in my mind anyway, you know, is like green, I don't know.
You're trying to ruin my point, Michelle.
I'm sorry. Sorry. Okay. You're right. That was very cool.
So Lester, I noticed again right here, he's using his hand pretty, I said it before with the phone and stuff, but he's walking around with his orange jacket on, and he's, you know, he's not wincing. And if your hand was hurt that badly, every movement you made would be killing you. But he's got his gloves on, he answers the phone, and he finds out that, well, I guess one little part we skipped is Chump picking up Lester, or picking up Malvo in the car with the crickets.
We don't know that yet, though.
We can hear them, though.
You can hear them.
And we do see a lizard or chameleon eating a cricket at the pet store.
So did you know then that's what he was in there getting?
No.
Okay, good, because I didn't either. I want to make sure it wasn't just me.
But I noticed Lester using his hand, and that's what I noticed. So they get he gets pretty ambushed by Numbers and Wrench, who have an amazingly efficient method of putting somebody into a trunk.
It's not their first time trunking a man, is it?
Excellent trunk technique. They got him in there in like 2 seconds.
Oh, I know. And, you know, granted, Lester was distracted because that was the impound calling to say that forensics was going over his car. So that would be like a kind of horrifying thing to hear in his situation. But they just, I mean, one of them's got the trunk open and bent over it, and the other one, it's almost like this stealthy ninja move where they just kind of throw him in the trunk and he is in there and gone.
Yeah. That also made me realize that Lester's starting to go through some of the experiences that these other victims have gone through. Like, he gets the trunk treatment. Later on, he gets dragged across the ice, and then he's running through the woods.
I know. So Lester calls his brother Chaz from the trunk, and Chaz doesn't even want to answer the phone because he's watching porn and down in his gun room basement. He's becoming just distasteful. I mean, not that he was necessarily tasteful before, but
he's not
becoming
that way. I think he's always been that way.
I guess. He just feels more slimy to me all the time, though. But he's telling him that he's kidnapped. He doesn't want to give him too much information. And then he reaches in his pocket and finds the taser. And he tells him he's just joshing with him, and he's pranking him, and forget it.
Yeah, I think the message there is that Lester doesn't want to tell anybody the truth. And when we get to the Zen Koan, the parable, we'll talk about that a little bit. But mm-hmm. he covers up whatever he can, he covers up. He doesn't come out with the truth. And that's a lot of the way that I think these northern Minnesota or Midwestern people sometimes, I'm from the Midwest, that's how they and we speak. We don't say, like when, remember we talked about the people in the insurance when they were talking to Lester and he was like, they were afraid to say, we just don't want your business. We're going to leave now. They came up with an excuse. They were indirect. And Lester's trying to stay indirect with even Chaz, like, you got to get me out of here, man. And these guys are going to kill me. He backs out as soon as he realizes he has another option other than the truth.
Well, yeah, because nobody knows. Nobody knows what he's done except for Malvo. Nobody knows. And Malvo wouldn't have known if he hadn't told him. So he didn't want to, I mean, he would have to give Chaz more information than that. But anyway, Numbers and Wrench are dragging him out on the ice. And they got that drum music playing again. Did you notice that?
Yeah, that's kind of their theme.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And so this is where Numbers trying to get Lester to, first he wants him to admit his name, which he does. And then he says he wants him to admit that he killed Sam Hess, and Lester says he didn't. And then he's kind of talking lowly to him. So Numbers gets closer to him to hear, because Numbers is asking him, he wants him to tell him who did kill him. And that's when he tases him.
Yeah, Lester gets a little bit better at his strategy. He makes him lean over so he can reach him, and then he zaps him.
Yeah, he did good.
That was smart.
It was smart. And, of course, Wrench has the auger going on the ice, and he couldn't have heard it anyway, so his back's to everything, and Lester runs away. Did you notice that shot that they did with him running through the untouched snow, and it's the barren trees and everything? Yeah. That was a great shot. And it also went back to, like you were saying, to Naked Trunk Guy running through the cold and the woods and all that. I think there was a lot of even nod back to the beginning of how this started.
Well, Wrench didn't hear him because he's deaf, too.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. He wouldn't have heard him anyway. But
why do you think Lester paused in the woods like that and looked back? They made kind of a point out of that scene. He didn't just keep bolting until he got through. Halfway through, he kind of stopped and looked around like, is this the right way to do this?
I did notice that, but I wasn't real sure what he was thinking at that point. What did you think?
Well, it made me think of the first guy from St. Paul who ran through the woods in his underwear. Mm-hmm. Like, if he would have stopped and thought, he probably would have thought, you know, I'd be better off not doing it this way and fighting or something, because what's the end result here? I'm going to keep running. I'm going to get farther away. It's below zero. I'm going to freeze. This isn't the right way out. And Lester doing that kind of reminded me of that guy's dilemma. But I don't know why. Because Lester was well-dressed and dressed for warmth and all that. And I don't know. At the time he was running, he was in kind of a dry part of the woods, too. It wasn't like he was getting stuck in the snow or anything.
No, but that snow was pretty deep and left some good footprint trails.
Later on, yeah. Later on.
Yeah.
And then he shows some more strategy when the cop doesn't want to give him a ride. He punches the cop to get thrown in jail.
I'm not sure I would have thought of that. Would you?
Well, I think it's another, I don't know what I would have thought of, but it kind of reminded me that here again, Lester's not telling the truth. Look, my life is nearly at its end because I have these criminals after me. Please help me. Like, he doesn't give in. He throws in another non-truth. I need a ride to town, and he won't tell him why, so he punches him, which is a pretty dramatic way to get a ride into town. But he barely,
did you see the punch?
Yeah.
I mean, the punch was like embarrassing. It was like a girl punch, you know, it was like this little pop, just a little,
yeah.
It was embarrassing. That was funny.
And the cop's just like, oh, heck, Oh, heck. What'd you do that for?
I know. The cop's like, well, now I got to arrest you. And he's like, well, all right, then let's get on with it. You know, it's just what he wanted. He just wanted to go in. So that was bad. And then again, we see Numbers and Wrench standing at the edge of the woods, watching him drive away. We see that a lot in these episodes. Someone standing from a distance, watching what's going on, you know, usually standing at the edge of the woods and stuff. Then we come to Stavros. Stavros is losing it. He's grinding his teeth. He's sweating. The clock's slowly ticking. He's signing his name frantically. He's watching the fan go round and round. He's trying to add numbers and all this. I mean, he is losing it. And his son comes in and wants to talk about his mom. He says he's not being nice. And then Stavros has some ugly things to say about it's kill or be killed. You know, you can't be nice. And then at that point, the cricket lands on his desk.
Yeah, and he takes care of it. Well, he makes Dimitri cry because it's too mean, being too mean. They make Dimitri, again, they reinforce how weak and how much of a patsy he is. And that may become really an important part because one of these next plagues is the death of the first son, isn't it? In the biblical references that we have with these plagues.
Ooh,
the firstborn.
I don't know.
You think that's the correct reference. But so here is firstborn son Dimitri, this weak little, meek little thing, and he's going to be the next thing on Melville's checklist or one of the upcoming things.
Well, Stavros is disgusted with his son anyway. Can't believe he's crying. He asks him, are you crying? I don't think he likes his son at all. And he certainly doesn't like his reactions to stuff.
So the crickets are everywhere. They're all over the place. And that would be pretty freaky if you're in a store and there's crickets everywhere. Even though they don't bite you or really hurt you, it's just freaky. That you can't even stand. You can't even walk without stepping on one.
Yeah, I completely sympathize with the girls screaming and running because that's exactly what I would be doing if I was in a store full of crickets.
So he gets the call for the ransom of $1 million. And it's a masked voice.
Stavros doesn't know that Malvo's in on this. And Stavros does know Malvo. So I think that would just give it away, don't you?
So it's more menacing to Stavros to hear God is watching and God is real. And it's like this mysterious voice that he can't attach to anybody he knows.
Well, right. And I think, you know, he thinks he's going crazy, we've already said. So I think that's just part of that, to hear an animated voice is much creepier than to hear just regular voice. But
so Numbers and Wrench are getting drunk. Do you think they got drunk on purpose to get thrown into jail?
I didn't think about that. Do you?
I do. Because they seem...
I don't know. They were just fighting. You know, they were fighting in the diner prior to that. And then they're fighting again. It's just like, I don't understand what's going on between them because we didn't see that kind of a hostile relationship in the last episode. And now they really seem irate with each other, and they did even prior to this scene. That might have been a setup to get them thrown in jail, which was brilliant if it was because they did see Lester going to jail. But
yeah, they have a lot of work to do. They can't just go to a bar and get drunk in the middle of the day, if they weren't doing this on purpose, it seems like that's what they were doing. I think they were planning this to get thrown in because they saw Lester get taken off in the car with the handcuffs. They know where jail he's going to be thrown into, so they could have easily set this up where they get, you know, thrown into the same situation.
Well, that's smart, and you're probably right. It was just that was a kind of a brutal fight. I mean, they made sure they went to jail if that was their take on it because that was rough. And I thought they were really angry at one another. So
next we see, well, you could have a plan like that and still get mad when you're in a fight. Like you're really mad that the guy's punching you. So Molly gets all hotted up for Gus in her civilian clothes. She looked pretty nice.
She's all spiffed up and she's got her hair down. She's out of uniform. That was sweet. She did that for Gus. I love that.
She also says something kind of cute like, where were you? I was going to send a search party, like a date might say to another date.
Right, like she was looking for him and waiting on him, so that was pretty sweet. And he goes on to tell her that he knew that it was Malvo and that they were the same person because he had said his name as he was walking out and he saw the look on his face.
Yeah.
And he goes on to tell her the riddle that Malvo had told him about the green. And Molly, of course, has the answer to it.
In 1 second, she knows the answer. So it's why does the human eye distinguish green, more shades of green, and it's because of predators, so they can see predators. I didn't know we were able to see more shades of green to start with, so. But it makes sense. One place you can hear the washing machine sound is now when we see Lester, when the guys get thrown into the same jail cell. You'll listen, you can hear that washing machine sound as those guys come into the cell.
Can I get a phone call?
And a chicken pot pie. Leave it up, rummies.
And
okay. And
then the show kind of ends. But this is why I think they got thrown in jail on purpose, is because the music at the end of the show is a song, and the first line of the song is, "Have you ever mistreated anybody in order to advance yourself?"
Yeah, I noticed that.
And that made me think those guys beat up each other to get thrown in and move their plan ahead.
But how would they even know that you'd get thrown into the same cell with somebody? And that could impede their ability to get to Lester, unless they knew.
It's a pretty small town, too. I mean, it's not going to have a different, you know, they're not in a different wing of the penitentiary. It's, even if they're not in the same cell, they might be right next to him where they can talk to him and menace him and stuff.
Yeah, they can still torture him because they're closer to him, I guess, in than out, maybe, is their...
And it's not really what people do in the show. It's how they menace things around what they literally do. It's the menacing that's the mean stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It's the torture. Well, I mean, the killing's kind of rough, too, but it's the torture and the stuff beforehand. I agree.
But they don't just kill somebody either. They don't just put a bullet in their head. They drag them slowly across the leg, drill a hole. You know, it's pretty bad. It's a long, slow death.
Well, yeah, and this is after they, like, have beat him up and everything. Just the whole thing's kind of rough, kind of gruesome.
So
how did they put it? Deliciously deranged. I think that's how one person put it.
That's the end of the scene. But so with the name game, what did you come up with? I know you probably have read about it. Eating the blame.
Yeah.
What does it mean, Michelle? Tell us what it means.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The parable is that circumstances arose one day which delayed the preparation of dinner for a Zen master, for Soto's Zen master Fugai and his followers. So in haste, the cook went to the garden with his curved knife and cut off the tops of green vegetables, chopped them together, made soup, and unaware in his haste that he had included a part of a snake in with the vegetables. The followers of Fugai thought they'd never tasted anything so great, and they kind of went on and on about it. But when the master himself found the snake's head in the bowl, he summoned the cook, and he's like, "What is this?" And he holds up the head of the snake, and the cook goes, "Oh, thank you, master," and he takes the morsel, and he eats it. That was the parable. A lot of the explanations on that parable were... weird to me.
Well, to me it just means eating the blame. Like he accepted the blame. That was me. I'm not going to give you an excuse. I directly and actively take responsibility for my action. And that's exactly the opposite of what Lester's doing. And that was my point earlier. That there's benefits to quickly and fully taking you know, responsibility for whatever your actions are. And not everybody has the ability to do that.
No, I think that's a pretty mature thing to be able to do, to accept blame and kind of go on.
Yeah. And Lester can't, you know, he doesn't speak up to his wife and stand up to her and say, "Don't talk to me like that." And he ends up killing her, which is a sideways way of dealing with it. And he doesn't stand up to like people like the bully that pushed him around and the bully's sons. You know, he kind of backs away, and it's exactly the opposite of what Lester's doing. So eating the blame was the, I don't know, that's what I read into it.
So I've got one question for you, Mike. Does Malvo look like the kind of guy who would want a pink police scanner?
Does he have a pink police scanner?
In the upcoming episode, it showed him saying, does he look like the kind of guy who would want a pink police scanner?
Okay.
It's pretty good.
So that's it for episode 4, Eating the Blame. Next week is the 6th Ungraspables, episode 5.
Sounds foreboding.
You got any predictions?
I don't, because I think we could really go any way at this point. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think the poor meek son is doomed. I think he's going to die. I don't know when, but I see that coming.
Do you think Sam Hess's sons will have the same fate, or do you think they're just out of it now?
I think they're out of it.
Okay. Well, that's sad.
What other role could they play?
I don't know. I mean, Numbers and Wrench are so convinced that Lester was having an affair. That could have just so easily been Bo Monk, the insurance owner. And then he would be the one. Poor Lester. I mean, here I'm saying it again. But he's got so much going on. And then you got this on top of it. On top of everything, you know, real that he's done wrong and has going on. Now he's got... He's being accused of something he didn't even do. All because the widow Hess is flamboyant in her scheming, wily, womanly ways. Poor guy.
And her lap dancery. Yeah.
In her lap dancery.
Well, those guys, Numbers and Wrench, aren't, you know, they find somebody. If he's not the right guy, they just dunk him. You know, that other guy was just a wrong guy in the wrong place.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder, did Wrench want to do that? Or was that just Numbers? Because Wrench doesn't seem too happy to be doing that, just to get rid of people in that way. He wants to make sure. Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe he just wants to make sure they're getting the right person. And he'll kill them anyway, but he just wants to make sure they're getting the right one.
I think that's the case. Like, they really couldn't have let that other guy go. What are they going to do? Let him go? He's like carries a knife in a strip club. He's going to come after them, or he's going to fight back somehow. He had to be taken out.
So they wouldn't have let Lester go even if he had told them who actually killed Sam.
No, of course not.
Okay.
They're hitmen. You know, their job, they're given orders to do their... They're not investigating, I don't think, so much as they are being given orders.
They just want to find the person who did it then to make sure they've gotten the right person.
Right.
Okay.
The right target, yeah.
Okay.
So that's it. We'll see you guys all next week for the 6 Ungraspables. It's another title that's hard to say.
Is it 6 or 5?
6. It's an episode 5, the 6 Ungraspables.
Oh. Okay. Okay, I was confused. I can't say it. The 6 Ungraspables.
All right, so that's it.
Okay.
Fargo TV is our feed. You can see it on iTunes. Give us a rating if you want. And you can find us on Facebook, too. Facebook/Fargo TV. So we'll see you all next week. Bye, Michelle.
Sounds good. Bye, Mike.